welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. Today, we're concluding our mini-series on the trends at the Brigade and Below by traveling across to the other side of the United States into the Pacific Theater to the Joint Pacific Multinational Readiness Center, or JPMRC. It is a continuously maturing, agile, and innovative CTC and is the U.S. Army's Pacific premier training and readiness capability for Army, Joint, and multinational forces in the Indo-Pacific Theater. Their purpose is to support the Theater Army campaign plan by building readiness, strengthening partnerships, and enhancing partner capability and interoperability to prevail in crisis and conflict when called upon. JPMRC executes regional CTC exercises to build combat-ready Army, Joint, and multinational forces prepared to fight and win in jungle, island, coastal, mountainous, high altitude, and Arctic environments. So to guide us through the various trends and how sustainment units are operating at JPMRC, I have with me today Lieutenant Colonel Keith Twitchell, who serves as the commander of the 4th Battalion, 196th Infantry Brigade, and Task Force Cobra, JPMRC at Fort Shafter, Hawaii. Lieutenant Colonel Twitchell enlisted in the Ohio Army National Guard in 1997, serving with HHC of the 112th Engineer Battalion Heavy. He was commissioned as a chemical officer through the direct commissioning program in 2008 and later transitioned to a logistics officer in 2012. He has served at Fort Bragg, Fort Knox, Fort Riley, the Pentagon, Fort Belvoir, and Fort Shafter with deployments to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Kuwait. His civilian education includes a Master of Science in Logistics Management from the Florida Institute of Technology, a Master of Military Science from the Marine Corps University, and a Bachelor of Arts in Criminology from Ashford University. I am just so thrilled and excited to have you on the show today, sir. Welcome.
Hey, Garrett. Thanks for having me. You listed all that stuff out. I forgot some of those times. Made me feel a little bit old. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, sir. Excited for this conversation today. And as we were just talking previously, as we're going through our prep for this episode, it's just interesting the career you've had and just the interesting part of And I kind of want to start this conversation off with is like, so you're an AGR officer serving for in JPMRC then?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm kind of a one-off. You don't hear that very often. And sometimes I like to fly under the radar, but I'm actually very proud to be an AGR officer. So I'm a Compo 3 Army Reserve AGR officer, which I'm Title 10, just like all the other officers on the team and AGR personnel. It's CSL Select, and as logistics officer, we used to have about four command positions that we were kind of all jockeying for, and we're kind of down to one now. And this is it, and this is the one that everybody wants. I mean, it's the show for sure. Unique experience. I've gotten to, we talked about a little bit before, I've gotten the opportunity to, be stationed on active duty bases, but also even near where I grew up in Cleveland, I was in Pittsburgh for almost 3 years with a deployment in there as well. So it's kind of like all over the place. Worked at HRC as chief of AGR session. So that was a unique experience. I've been at Fort Belvoir as a log cap battalion XO. I've also worked at the Pentagon as an operations officer in DAG3. So a little bit of everything, So I'm actually, sometimes I sit back and you're an enlisted soldier all those years back and go, see yourself as a battalion commander. Here in Hawaii, I would have said no way. But I'm happy to be here, man. Every day is a blessing. I'm surrounded by amazing people that it's hard to not get motivated with the team we've got out here. And you got to work and get better every day, like my commander says. And just, you owe it to everybody out here. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good time, and just it would be funny just if we could go back in time and tell our younger selves what we'd be doing today. Because I joke, it's like for me, it's like, oh, you're gonna be doing a podcast for the Army, and I'm like, what? No way! Like, I just would have never been on my bingo cards to be doing.
Yeah, you probably would have said, "What's a podcast?"
That is true, actually. And there's another part that's unique about your position. So you're the commander of the 4th Battalion 196, as well as the senior sustainer for Task Force Cobra. So how does that work?
I mean, yeah, very unique. That's a great question. It's JPMRC is the CTC, you know, and just like I was mentioning before, so my commander is also the COG or commander of ops group for JPMRC. As you've talked to the other CTCs, they have COGs as well. But he's also the brigade commander of the 196th Infantry Brigade, which is like their main task and purpose, as opposed to the CTC part, is the mobilization and training of Compo 2 and 3 in the Pacific. So our battalions, because we have a battalion in Alaska, we have a battalion in Guam, and then 1st Battalion and 4th are here at Fort Shafter. But we kind of all like split the load on that as far as like training up with like Guam National Guard has a big piece with 3rd Battalion. You know, we've got Army Reserve and National Guard here in Hawaii. And so sometimes they ask for mobilization support. We're trying to like build that relationship every day. So whether we're going to their battle assemblies or we're going to their AT and helping to get them into our exercises, that's kind of been my thing, is I've really, really tried to bolster that relationship specifically with Compo 3 and the sustainment units to try to get them into our exercises. And when we do that, you know, we've had, you know, sometimes it's not easy because they have a lot of scar tissue from before. And you've been around this too. We're like, hey, we're going to invite National Guard or Army Reserve. And they're like, we don't want to be op four, or we don't want to be gate guards or working in the chow hall. You know, we actually want to give them an exum, you know, an exercise summary, give them validation of you've been that stamped through JPMRC. And we're showing that they're showing everyone they can do what they're supposed to do, you know, as a unit. So that's kind of where we are. And yeah, it's very different. And until, you know, we get plussed up, what'll end up happening is that'll split, and each one of the battalions will keep that commander for 196. And then the task force, like Task Force Cobra, that 05 will be a Compo 1 previous BSB commander who will come over and be Cobra 6. And then they will take over the OCT duties for JPMRC.
I definitely have very unique CTC in a sense of like how you're balancing both these roles right now, compared to, you know, the other conversations we've had, the other CTCs, and specifically on the focus on Compo 2 and 3. And on that, I mean, that's not the only thing you're unique on. Like I mentioned at the beginning, like you're training so many different environments. I mean, the biggest ones we think of is like the jungle or the island compared to the Arctic. Like that is two very extreme climates and environments to operate of. So how does your team balance that?
That's a great question. And when I got here, I was asking myself the same thing, but I'll tell you, it really comes down to we have to immerse ourselves in all of it. You know, I just told you, like I said before, we just got back from Alaska, where we're north of Fairbanks, you know, and how drastic the conditions are up there. But we really try to actively recruit, at least I do, specifically from 11th Airborne or 25th ID to kind of get those subject matter experts in there. But there's really no replacement for just getting out there. You know, we have tough people in this group who are very smart and very good at what they do, but you have to also like understand we have to know field craft as well, which like if you talk to our brigade sergeant major, you know, that's getting bigger and bigger is really getting back to the basics of field craft, because as you go into either one of these environments, and you've served in 11th and 25th. So you know both. It's like, these are some of the only places, you know, and not the only ones, but very specifically in the Army, where the environment gets a vote, and they can definitely have impacts, and some of them are safety, and you have to be tough, and you've got to have good NCOs and good leaders, you know, that are paying attention to everybody. But I'd have to say that you just have to get out there and embrace the unique challenges, because they're not just for the training units. We're going through it too, you know. So
exactly.
So yeah.
So like when you're OCs, they have to be trained on all these, like we said, the jungle environment as well as the Arctic environment. So I can't imagine like what that's been like for your OCs. Like they're training in both environments, so they got to be such experts and on their craft, because I mean, they can go anywhere now, especially after they leave their OC roles.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And even this, like, I think we've got 5 weeks now, Garrett, and we'll be in the Philippines for a month. So talk, you know, and you're going to be, that's 90 degrees, 100% humidity, and you're out there. I mean, these are where specifically sustainment has real consequences, you know? It's like that 11th, you know, where you're in the 25th and we're operating on Oahu or something. It's like, hey, you're pushing class one and water and water and water. You're in Alaska and it's fuel. It's, you know, they can melt the snow, but it's a lot of fuel. It's very deliberate. It's very slow. But then you get out to the Philippines, I mean, just sitting still, if you don't have water, I mean, you're in trouble. So yeah, real, it's tough environment for sure.
And then in Alaska, you deal with, well, technically you're surrounded by water with all the snow, but everything's frozen then.
Yeah. Those guys, I don't know how they do it on a day-to-day basis. And that, you know what, going back to like the original part of the questions, we're never going to be more of an expert than those training units, because that's what makes us different too with JPMRC. Like, RC, we're like a mobile CTC, so we're always at an away game. So like, we're in your training box, if that makes sense, which makes us different than a, say, a JRTC, where they own the box and they own the environment, if you will, to an extent. And even the scenario where, you know, the lead trainer for this is the division commander for us, and they can change that scenario if they want to get after the training objectives, you know, of theirs for that brigade. Well, then we're the best dance partner there is, because we'll make that happen, you know. But we're never going to really be, you know, I would, and I hope not, as much of an expert as those soldiers and officers is in those environments themselves. They're living it every day. I mean, you go to Alaska and start telling, you know, the soldiers that are in the box, you know, something about field craft. I mean, you got to kind of listen. You got to be a good listener too.
Yeah. That is something that is very unique, is that these units, especially like the 11th Airborne, like they have home field advantage. Cause that's what they live and breathe that. I mean, so much throughout the year, just constant Arctic operations. So, whereas a lot of units have to travel to their CTC, they have to go through that whole entire process of setting up rail or setting up movements and doing the whole, the travel. It's like NTC or JRTC. It's like there, it's, hey, this is our home field. We're going to move out, you know, either from Wainwright, you know, or J-Bear to the training exercise. So that's a very unique thing that the 11th gets to do. Because I mean, really it's the pinnacle of Arctic environment, you know, for our forces up there.
Absolutely. And I tell you, if you've never been there as like a LOGIS fishing, it's hard to describe. And the conditions are so extreme and the problem sets are completely unique to these units. I mean, it gets very difficult to try to be like, hey, you guys got to follow doctrine here, man. Like, and do this and this. It's like, well, there's a way of surviving. I mean, I don't know if you worked in DTA or if you were at the UConn training or the YTA.
I've done both.
You did both. Yeah. Like, they're both completely different animals, and they're only about an hour and a half apart. But, like, can't really OC one the same as you would the other. So you kind of got to get creative to help them get after. You know, we're just trying to make them better. You know, and as, like, an OC for a BSB, I always try to start off the training unit by telling them, like, I'm not here to play gotcha games with you or go, you know, make a list here and check things off and go, you are, you know, you can BSB now. Like, that's just not how we are. And my team is just, we want you to get better. And if that's two or three things that can help you get after training objectives or just get better as a whole, communication, analog products, this kind of stuff. I mean, we just want them to get better. So that's really our focus when we're in these kind of environments, because there's just so much to take in, you know?
Yeah. And you brought, like, one thing that we talked about when I was serving up in Alaska is like, hey, if you can do it in the Arctic, you can do it anywhere, because it truly is, the environment's trying to kill you. If it's the cold,
they're still saying that up there. They're still saying that up there, by the way.
Because it's true. Like, I mean, you're fighting the cold. Like, it's like, okay, I go in. I'm like, oh, finally, I get a hot chow. I go up. I grab my hot chow. I walk outside. It's frozen. Like,
yeah. No, I mean, everything is just more deliberate. The planning needs to be thought through way more. Everything is just, you know, from your field prep, but maintenance, maneuver, everything is just a little bit slower, and there is just bigger consequences around the corner. So it's like, yeah, it's just hard to describe, but you're right. They make it work. I mean, you've been through it, and it's something to see.
Exactly. And I know, you know, we've been talking, like, you just got back from the most recent JPRMRC exercise in Alaska. So anything else you can, you know, add to that from your experience from that exercise?
You know, it's tough. Like, and I'm just going to say, like, especially when you're coming up there as an OC, and the first thing you tell them is, like, we're coming from Hawaii. So then you see their faces, just go, that's great. Like, you know, it's negative 40 outside. And we're trying to get them back out in the field, like, you know, and you probably did this too, but for 111, they were just coming out of Wolf Valkyrie. So they just came out of, like, where it was horrible out there. And they were out there for weeks at a time in the field, trying to get after the same sort of training environment. And then we're like, ready, who's ready for JPMRC? And like, boo, like, you know, you're trying to get them out there again. But what we saw is, and this is something that, you know, it's not unique to them, but it's something we just came out of, is just that I observe that it's very difficult to do, and I'm going to say this trying kindly, but to do real contested logistics or real contested sustainment in these environments, because I get it. You know, we're not the show. We're not sexy. We're not maneuver. We're not fires. You know, we have HIMARS there this time. So, like, we're not outshining that. However, if we really wanted to turn that on, and I've had this conversation with a few of the other task force commanders, like, this thing wouldn't go anywhere. You want to turn on contested logistics or sustainment, man, like, this thing would be shut down so fast, because it's so paramount, man. Like, you know, their sustainment tail, or we start trying to put these constraints of, like, you guys can't really go to this fuel station because it's technically not in the box. And they're like, well, then that's it. We're done. There's nowhere else to go. Like, you know, like, and you're like, oh, well, let me see if we can figure that out then. And maybe we'll give you guys a pass on that one. Cause if not, this whole thing's done. But it's like, it's just different. And so you're trying, you can't have the same stress on systems that maybe I would when I'm in Oahu or in the Philippines, if that makes sense. But you're still trying to be like, you know, you're still trying to get them better at their processes and honing the other stuff, if that makes sense. But it's just different. And that's what I would notice there, is just that, like, if you really wanted to turn on, you know, contested logistics or something like that, or I think the new word is agile logistics or sustainment, you know, it creates some real problems. Like, our exercise would probably be pretty short. That makes sense. So,
yeah, I mean, I just, you brought up, like, with the difference, even in the training areas, like I'm a warrior there. You got some elements training at YTA, you got some training at DTA. I mean, those are two very vastly different environments you're dealing with. I mean, YTA, that's one area where you really have to watch for rollovers from the ice. That was a constant thing we had to fight, or not fight, but have to send out recovery crews for, because just a simple thing, would the truck be going down the hill, brakes lock in, or the driver wasn't as proficient, slide off the road, we have to recover that, or different rollovers.
But yeah, just, YTA, like, I mean, I've never been anywhere like this for us, but like real estate's at a premium. Like, there's nowhere to put all these units sometimes. And we were 100% at YTA this time. And it was like, we're trying to echelon in, you know, just even the FSCs, like get them in first so that we can come in after, and the BSBs just kind of waiting their turn, you know. And you know this, there's no DSB up there yet, so you have like a CSSB that kind of answers to, I guess, the Division G4, and then the, you know, I mean, you're trying to coordinate these units that you don't typically have that kind of to worry about, that kind of C2 from a sustainment side, that like I do in the 25th, like I can just talk to the DSB commander and go point to point. But difficult for these guys. Real estate's different. I mean, talk about not even rollovers, man, like just get stuck everywhere. And then it was like, and then we said recovery, and that guy got stuck, and then track vehicles, and we busted a track. I mean, it was just, you couldn't make this stuff up. So yeah, definitely unique.
What was the coldest you faced?
Oh man. This time around, because I also went to Arctic school too. So I did it CWIC up at the Northern Warfare Training Center. But and I got a lucky one that time. I tell people this. Well, I actually don't tell people this. So now everyone's gonna know. It really wasn't that cold when I went to school. So like I was like, oh man, it's brutal. You know, it was like 10 degrees or maybe got to like zero. Well, this time around, I think I saw negative 45.
Okay.
Negative 45. And then I don't know what the wind chill was on that, but that's like what, zone five? We call it zone five. Yeah, zone five. And we had to go to ground for the day. But you know, these guys did it like pros. No cold weather injuries from the BSB during this time. It's crazy, right? But yeah, negative 45. And then, of course, it warms up a little bit. And then the morning we were leaving town, it was like negative 40 when I'm in like my sweatpants and my roller bag trying to get to the airport. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, so yeah, that was the coldest I had.
Oh man, those were some good times. For me, it was negative 57 was the coldest that I operated in for one of the exercises. And but it comes to a point where it's all the same.
Just what I was cold. Gonna say, where is that one though? Someone was it Josh Simmons was telling me there's like, what's that sweet spot? Is it like negative 10? Where it's like, it's actually when you're in, you know, level ones and threes and fives maybe, but it's like, it actually feels nice. But if you go like a little bit warmer, it gets too, the humidity goes up. And then if you go a little colder, it's like, but there was, and I felt it after a while, there's like this sweet spot of like negative 10 where you're like, oh, I can operate in this. This isn't too bad. But then as soon as it drops, like you said, I don't know, how do you tell the difference between like negative 30 and negative 40? It's just
cold.
It's just cold. Yeah.
And one of the things you'll see up there, for those who get stationed up in Alaska, when it's been cold like that for so often, it gets above zero, people will be out in shorts. It's just a natural thing.
Maniacs. Yeah. I saw them at the PX. Just a couple guys, like when it was like 10 degrees, 15 degrees, shorts. They're like, you know, heat wave. But
it's this uniqueness up there. And I know for JPMRC, what's another thing that's unique about them is you got one brigade will be the training audience and one, the other brigade will be the support. And they'll switch back and forth each year. When it comes to back in Hawaii, is that the same way down there for them, or how does that work?
Yeah, it is. Now we're trying to get to where we eventually have our own professional, like op four, like a Geronimo or something like that, like they have at JRTC. But yeah, as of right now, we'll take one battalion from the brigade that's not the RTU, make them the op four, and then they'll go up against the brigade.
Okay. So yeah, it's definitely a new thing for like for all the listeners out there. Like one, if you're gonna go be an OC, and this is a different, or if you're going to be stationed up, you know, Hawaii or Alaska, this is just part of the way the exercises are ran. You're out, you're every year you're gonna be doing one. Either you're training or you're gonna be supporting with that.
Yeah. No, and you know what, I'll tell anyone who's listening about that too, like, don't think of it either as like I'm gonna be on op four, because I'm gonna tell you, number one, those guys have a time of their life. Like, they're just I just came from those guys in Alaska and up out here where they're buzzing around on either dirt bikes or four wheelers, being fire markers or you know, making runs at the BSB and stuff like that as op four. But then they're up in Alaska, they're on snowmobiles, they're having a blast. Like, you know, they get to kind of change their uniform a little bit and kind of work outside the box. So they're having a good time. But it's definitely unique, like you're saying. Like it's not typical that you'd have an entire division involved in the CTC, but I think it's good too because we give them reps too. So you're not out, like you're not like, oh, we're the brigade out. Like we're our cog and our commander is talking to that battalion commander, and he's getting coached and trained and mentored just like the RTU is, you know, the training unit, the training audience is. So I think that's, I mean, what's cooler than that is like even when you play out four, you're getting better.
Yeah, and you kind of answered this a little bit just now, but like, really, what's it like to be an RTU versus an OCT when you're at a CT, you're going through a CTC rotation?
I'd say as the OCT in the environment, we're not on, I'm being straight up, we're not under that same stress that they're under. However, you know, we observe systems, processes, and we're just trying to remain objective. It's hard, you know, obviously, and I always tell people this too. It's hard when you're at the RTU and you're under that kind of stress, and we're always like, hey, don't take it personal. We're just trying to, but it's very difficult to not take criticism or critiquing or however you'd like to word it kindly as personal. We're in the people business. Everything we do is personal. But there's just a way that we can do it where we try to be, maybe we're a little more heavy on coaching, a little less on training, and it just depends on that. But yeah, we're not under that same stress that they are. However, we're able to also be objective, sit back, look at you holistically, because like I said, like say it was for 25th goes through Bronco Blitz or one of these other exercises, or as I talked about Wolf Valkyrie for 11th, and then they come to us and they're like, hey, this worked great in our exercise. And I'm like, well, what was the difference? Well, the difference was there was no one there kind of catching some of the little things. Maybe it's your processes that you guys are used to, or we are part of your pace plan that you never really deviated from or really flushed out and stuff like that. And then maybe I'll come in and I definitely do this, which much to their chagrin, but like I'll just take your internet out. How's that? Did you guys do that during that exercise leading up to this? Well, no, we talked about it. Yeah, well, how was it when I did that? But I also did it when we were in, like, you know, battle period two of JPMRC, and you guys have a lot of stuff going on, and I just kicked your teams, you know, or you're only operating off of Maven, and I just shut that down because you guys, because I want them to flush out maybe like using analog products. Or FM, God forbid we use that between our nodes and stuff like that. But yeah, it's different. If I was to sit there and go, oh man, we get it. We're in there, that'd be a bit of a embellishment. We're in the environment with them, but they are definitely under a different level of stress than we are, if that makes sense.
No, and it does, and it's just interesting always to see just between each of the CTCs, the different perspectives when it comes to that relationship. Hey, if I'm an RT unit here, or I'm an OC here, and that kind of gets into our next topic is really the trends that you're seeing, specifically at the brigade and below. And what's unique is like we've been having this whole conversation is because of the different operating environments between the islands and the jungles versus the Arctic. Like, really, what have you been seeing?
Oh man, that's a great question. You know, give me a second on that one because there's a lot. You know what? what I have seen, especially when it comes to new concepts, and you're closer to the schoolhouse. So, I mean, it was new to me was when I came out here, we started seeing the cluster concept. From an LSB standpoint, like we're seeing that with the 25th and they go into clusters and stuff like that. These concepts, I mean, I know were not derived from here, if that makes sense. They didn't come from the island concept. And if you look at the way that they're written up, and this is just, you know, one loggie's perspective, is I think that I get the concept that you want to be leaner and really focus on survivability and dispersion, if you will. But you have to understand, like when you start taking, for instance, like roll two and splitting it up into different clusters or nodes, that's not roll two anymore. Because roll two is these capabilities. It's all the things that encompass roll two. And now you basically have three roll one pluses. And then what happens if this one's taken out? Now you have, you know, now you've lost your surgeon or you've lost that capability. And I understand it. I'm not trying to bag on it. It's just, but what my point is that in a real conflict, some of these nodes or the way that they'd be split up would be on different islands. So now how are you doing distro and how are you resupplying or I forgot to tell you, half my maintenance isn't in Bravo Company because there is no Bravo Company. They're in Blue Cluster and the other half is in here and on a different island. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I get what they're doing. But it also from a C2 standpoint, which I could unpack, is to me doesn't make any sense. Or I guess if you were going to do it, I would just package it differently. So what I mean by that is I kind of broke it down a little bit is where you have the cluster concept, you have the nodes where they're split up and there's multiple capabilities. But when things happen, like say a MassCal or something like that, these aren't the typical companies. So there's this weird structure of like, who do I belong to, if that makes sense? Am I part of Alpha Company or am I part of Red Cluster? And they don't live together, if that makes sense, like throughout the week. So if that is going to be the way forward and that is going to be the concept that we're going to run with, why not just make Red Cluster Alpha Company then? And they can live together, bond together, do PT together Monday through Friday. I mean, that's where they're really building that team, because sometimes you'll see these nodes or clusters, and this is in both 11th and 25th, is this is the first time that they work together. They don't have any of that built up or bonds or just some of those SOPs are different. Like this is a Bravo Company SOP that they might use Monday through Friday. But then when they went to Wolf Valkyrie, now I'm in Red Cluster or node and we use this node SOP, or they don't even have one. So I guess I've seen a lot of these new concepts and I get it where it's coming from, but I just think that in an island fight or in the Arctic, I'm just not so sure that they're plug and play, if that makes sense.
Anyway, and you bring up a couple of unique points. One, it's didn't think about it, like when it comes to the island fight, what the 25th does, like, you could be on two different islands and either in close proximity or far apart. Like that's a whole different concept, interesting way, especially when it gets into the island hopping campaigns. But also your points on, because I know we were doing the same thing a lot when I was in Alaska, is like the base concept. We were like trying it out for the first time. And I guess it'd be neat to, and how you kind of brought up, is like maybe we create these, I guess, change formations in a sense to get after maybe the same concept of like, hey, this base cluster needs to have this support, or this base cluster needs to have this support. But when you have it where part of Alpha's there, part of Bravo's there, or like, then you're getting people who have never worked together trying to put them all together. Whereas if it's just, hey, we're going to put Alpha there, but actually this new Alpha Company is parts of what, you know, this quote unquote, this would be a whole new formation, like a whole new, but it would be what Alpha and Bravo used to be. So I guess we can make small SACs or something. I don't know. Like, I can see what you're getting after.
No, but that's kind of the analysis that I would look at would be you're making essentially like, and I think there's what they're trying to, you're making like smaller BSAs, you know? But at the same time, do we want to just plus up FSCs or do we, you know what I mean? Or do we want to absorb them more and push forward? I don't know, but I think why not just, you know, you see it with the engineers through the last RStruck. I think they added maintenance. I think it was maintenance to the engineers. And I'm going to say this wrong because I'm old school, but it's like the KEC-I, the way they call an engineer company. But they plussed up with like maintenance capabilities. So it's like if you're just trying to get after having three different locations that have all the capabilities of a BSB, well, then just make the companies that way. You know, like Charlie Med doesn't have to be Charlie Med. It can just be Charlie Company with a little bit of everything. An Alpha Company can be a little bit of everything, you know, because I don't know, just from a C2 standpoint, it's like that would have to be weird. And I hadn't deal with it. So, but some of the commanders had a problem with it. Some didn't. Some were actually very adaptable. But to me, it's like, if I'm Alpha Company commander and I have these 100 troops throughout the week, and then when we go to the field, though, I only have 30 of them and the rest of them are dispersed everywhere. I mean, then what's the point? I don't know. It just seems like just make that the company.
That's what it kind of gets into the concept of, like, you're seeing firsthand a lot of things when it comes to transformation and contact, or TIC is what we're referring it to, and how things are changing, these new formations, how they're, you know, as you brought up, you know, the LSBs. And that's the whole point of this, is especially the concept of continuous transformation and in transformation contact, is learning as we go and seeing what's going to work, what doesn't work. And as we've gone through TIC, you know, formations have went back and forth. Some units are trying it one way, another unit might be trying another way, just to see. And I know sometimes it's not going to be a one size fits all solution, especially from, you know, what I've seen in when I was in Alaska. I know there's a lot of stuff. Well, this formation works in the desert, or it works in this environment, but it is definitely not going to work in Alaska. So giving units that freedom to adapt their formations on what's best going to fit their operating environment.
And I'm not saying that, like, I have the answer on, like, all. I just can tell that, like, if we have this new way forward where we're going to do this with these guys, then just, you know, allow them to cut it however they're going to slice it, but then just say, all right, now that give them the freedom to make that the unit, if that makes sense, which you and I have been through that. Like, it's not like any of these kinds of changes from a force management standpoint are going to happen tomorrow. So I think, you know, it always takes like two or three years, like a POM cycle, but they're living it, you know?
And that's why I always tell people, is that the heart of having professional discourse, eyes with, you know, us talking on this podcast or people writing, you know, articles, getting them published in their professional journal, is just having that dialogue, having that conversation so that we can share our stories, you know, share this, like, hey, this is what I saw, as you're doing right now. You're telling, hey, these are the trends that I saw. Maybe this is a good way we could do it. This is maybe a better way, or I don't think that's going to work this way, so that things and decisions don't exist in a vacuum. And people can, like, all come to the table was like, okay, these are some good ways to do something based on, you know, these different, I'll say, trial and error, but just what we're going through when it comes to training. So it's good to have that we're having conversations like this. And then I always implore people, get out, like, for all those who just went through JPMRC in Alaska and, like, did different exercises in Hawaii, write about it. Tell your story, because that's how we're going to continue to get better, and how we want to develop through TIC and continuous transformation. So one of the questions also I've asked each of the CTCs, I know there's a lot of things that go into a unit being successful, not only in a CTC rotation, but in any operation they're faced with. And this starts before a unit even hits ground with planning actions. Can you, like, walk us through what you've seen when it comes to units through their planning actions before they even hit ground? And, like, this can be from their administrative actions to, like, their training glide path.
No, and that's a great point. What I try to do, and I did this last year, was the current BSB commander that we just OC'd, he was on the other side, obviously, when I did 725 at the other training last year with 11th. So, and we kind of sat down, we had like a day before I left, and he goes, "Hey, what, how can I be successful at JPMRC in this scenario?" It's like, really, what I would say is it starts with the basics. Now, I could break down how we go through the concept design, and then you have our, site surveys and stuff like that. And the division has a real big piece of that, whether it's 11th or 25th, because they're trying to get after that brigade's training objectives, which are set by that senior trainer. And as I mentioned, is the division commander. And that's kind of a difference between us and the other CTCs. But what I'd say is, from a planning standpoint, is you kind of try and look at their yearly, their training calendar. And what I always say is, it's like, between now and then, I'm not gonna like say something to you that's gonna, teach you how to BSB. These are professionals, that are in pretty respected divisions that know what they're doing. However, how they can get better here in the planning from me, is get good at the basics. Sometimes they're worried about these concepts or how they're going to look on paper or this, that, and the other. It's like, good man, go back to the basics. Shoot, move, communicate. Well, I like to coach hard on get after producing analog products, because and different types of communications up and down the chain, in case we decide to turn out the lights, and stuff like that. And then, because you have to remember too, we're not doing this, or really the CTC, in my opinion, for that battalion commander or for me. They're really doing it for these junior soldiers and junior officers who've never seen the whole thing work, in a deployed environment. And you're trying to flush through these things, and they want to get through the exercise, but really, if they can get really good at the basics, you know what I mean? Like I said, analog products is huge for me. Get that log cop that's accurate between the SPO, FSCs, and Brigade 4. I mean, you're killing it if you can do that. And then, stay nested with the maneuver plan. I mean, I can't say this 100 times. Like, what are they doing in 48 hours? And how can you, get that, where you're getting ahead of them, if anything. I mean, you're never truly going to be ahead of them, but you're trying to really forecast that sustainment for 48 hours, 72 hours. Are they going into the defense? Are we going to get hot on class four? It shouldn't be a surprise, but getting back to your question, I'd say, with the basics is like quartering parties, doing location recons, fighting position placement, cover, concealment. When was the last time you reacted to IDF or direct contact, and you're not just sitting back like and going, "We're sustainment, stuff happens." Like, no, I mean, these exercises will teach you that you need to plan for that kind of stuff too. And we stimulate them that way. And actually, soldiers love it. Soldiers love to be engaged directly by the op four. I mean, you talk about some smiles in these kind of spaces. I love it, but sometimes, things get in the way. You've been in these units too, where, change of command, and this person's priorities now are this, and we're getting this new sergeant major, new first sergeant. They don't want to go to the range so much, or we don't have the ability to, or, listen, you're going to have to assume some risk on some things, but if you want to be good at this or get into the, you have to plan those things out. That has to be part of your planning a year out, is that this is how we're going to get after the basics. And I've seen the units that are good at the basics are the most successful units we have. And it makes, our team's job so easy, because we're kind of just sitting back tweaking the little things, like, "Hey, when was the last time you updated those SOPs?" And we're checking lights, licenses, to make sure you have night driving on there. I mean, sound small, but those little things build up, and that's how you really can sharpen them up. But yeah, like if they can get good at the basics and they have that planned out a year out or so, I mean, get away from this leading through team stuff, you know, and get back outside. So yeah, that's what I would recommend.
Get away from the desk officer. Get out there. And on that, you bring up a lot of good points. Specifically, like the first time you're doing something should not be in a CTC rotation.
No.
You need to be doing a lot of training.
Yeah. A long time ago, even during the week, I remember as a soldier, we would just go and take the tents out. Just in the morning, pop them out, you know, fold them back up, put them back in the truck, and come back to the motor pool. So it's like, when we went out in the field, that kind of stuff was a joke. We were just getting antennas set up. Comma was up quick. You know, we're already in our fighting positions. We've got everything. Range cards. Oh, man. People do range cards. Stuff like that. But it just gets to be easy secondhand. But you got to do it. It becomes muscle memory. And it can't be, like you said, like this is the first time we've ever shut off the computers or had something like this happen.
The more you do, you know, leading up to it, as you said, like, you know, the year out from your rotation, the more successful you're going to be with that. And that kind of gets into my next topic is, like, can you want to walk us through, like, what you've witnessed when it comes to command post operations and the sustainment fighting products?
I mean, it's kind of all over. But what we've seen a lot has been a major reliance on digital products, specifically on that log cop, like I talked about, whether it's on Teams, a lot of Wicker chats, a lot of Teams chats up and down the chain. We try to coach hard, like I said, on producing those analog products. And sometimes we have to force feed that by turning out the lights. But yeah, we've seen that a lot. Like, you know, that reliance on technology, and I tell you, it really stung them this last rotation. They were operating off of Sipper Teams, and they only had one system to use, and it was at the battalion. So they're doing this swivel chair where someone has to pull all the information down to distribute it to the companies who don't have a Sipper system, definitely not in the field. So then as you're going through battle period changes or change of missions, they can't even see the op order, you know? So now who's distributing that? Now we're playing telephone. And did that person that swivel chaired it, did they get all the info? Is it everything we needed to know? Which then goes back to, really, really having a solid pace plan that you've actually flushed out. Or I'm going to go even further back and say a heavier reliance on the sustainment rehearsal. You know, that's what I've noticed. And that ties into that command post operations and stuff like that, because that should have laid everything out. And I'm old school where, like, you show someone a map, you should be able to brief a concept of support on one map. I don't need 100 slides. I don't need anything, just a map. And I can tell you where we're going and how we're going to support. But yeah, it just gets further into digital reliance. Some of the units, though, I will say this, are very good at pivoting. So like we think we got them, you know, we're gonna kick their internet today or something, and everyone's gonna just flounder. And they hit it, you know what I mean? You can tell it's part of like an SOP, or this unit's used this as almost like a battle drill after like an EW attack or something like that. So we're trying to like replicate that effect of going blind. But you really, you know. It's been tough to flush out, particularly when it comes to their pace plans and stuff like that of late.
Yeah, I mean, this goes to anybody out there. You cannot become so solely reliant on technology. It could be as simple as a generator running out of fuel and you have no power. Like, we need to be able to react. And while this technology has made us very efficient, like, we need to still be able to do everything analog and be able to react to contact as anything's possible.
Absolutely. And I don't want to beat up the sustainers like this because I'm one of them. A lot of this is top down. You know what I mean? This is not like, oh, the BSB decided to only do this. No, these are decisions made by a division, pushed to the brigade, and then we're like, hey, this is how we're going to operate. And everyone's like, okay, this is going to create some pig, you know, some problems for us, you know, because you can lead, you know, through different ways, maybe when it comes to a maneuver unit or fire unit, and I'm not taking anything away from them, but when you're doing sustainment and you constantly need that up and down communication of like, hey, what do you need? You're trying to get predictive if possible. And that's very hard to do if you can't see the whole picture, you know what I mean? Or you kind of blinded the companies and they're the ones on the roads. So, you know, really difficult for them when they operate this way. But you know, that gives them something to work on. And when you're in our standpoint, we can go through that. And I'm not gonna beat them up over and over on that. It just becomes one of those things we talk about in an AAR where we say, hey guys, you did see that when we maybe pulled that teams, it was a little difficult to operate or you're blind for a little while. Could you imagine what that'd be like? If that was for a day or 2 days, you know? So just think about that going forward and how can we work on that and refine SOPs and get tighter going forward.
Exactly. And do you have any more additional good tips or tricks, I'd say, for units that are going to be operating at JPMRC?
Man, good tips or tricks. Maybe call someone that works there ahead of time. You know? No. Really what I think the would be is just be open to that, those conversations with your OCTs, I guess, because we're going to give you the answers to the test, if that makes sense. And like I said, it's almost like you have to be a good student sometimes, but be a good listener. Try to reach out. Make sure that you have the right people at these planning conferences who are making the scenario. And this is a good one. You're going to love this. I'm going to tell you, I go crazy about this thing. Is get everybody in that damn brigade at the sustainment rehearsal. You will make your life so easy. If you're listening to me on here and you're one of these people, please get a hold of all the XOs for every one of the fires companies or batteries. Get a hold of all the maneuver commanders, first sergeants you can get your hands on. Get the division surgeon in there. Walk the dog on every scenario by battle period on how you're going to support them or where the friction is. How are you going to get casualties off the battlefield? Real world and scenario. Everyone needs to be in that room because I'm going to tell you, Garrett, and you know this, none of those people I just named show up. We get 3 days into the exercise and like everyone starts flipping out about how we didn't have any idea that this is how we were going to get fuel or get a person off the battlefield or have to evacuate to this location. Like, how could you not go to the sustainment rehearsal? It's the only rehearsal where we talk about taking care of people. Like giving you things and people don't show up and they don't participate. And then the BSB, you know, not just the BSB, I'd say the whole sustainment community from the FSCs to the CSSB, they're sitting there trying to tell everyone, we went over this. I thought we had a plan. Now it's, you know, and they're changing it. But if no one shows up there and no one flushes that out where they're like, I'll tell you for the 11th, they have a maneuver unit that goes in so deep that the only way to get to them is over the snow. Well, the BSB can't evac your casualty that way. You're going to have to meet them somewhere where you're going to evac over the snow to here and we'll get them. We flush that out. How long did that take? 10 seconds? But we do that standing on a mat in front of the brigade commander. We get blessed off and everyone leaves and goes, hey, man, we can do this. And hey, we know how we're going to be supported. But, you know, that never seems to happen and we don't get that participation. And I think if I could give you one trick, it'd be invite too many people to the sustainment rehearsal, you know, so that's what I got.
I think every sustainer right now is just chuckling to themselves. I'm imagining, right. Like, yep, been through that before.
Yeah.
Nobody shows up. Oh, man. So we've talked a lot about the unit side. One of the things I always like to, with these miniseries that we've been doing is like from the OC side, OCT side, what advice do you have someone who's coming specifically to JPMRC?
It's a good question. I think if you're coming to JPMRC specifically anyway, like right now we're taking post KD. So my team is, they're amazing. So, just from I'll do this one too. This is my elevator speech for people coming to JPMRC. If you're an NCO, 100% of my NCOs have been promoted. 100%. I've been in command a year and a half, and I have two that are on the promotion list, but they're like number 10 or something like that. Every one of my NCOs has been promoted from E6, staff sergeant to sergeant first class, or sergeant first class to master sergeant. I've had two, which I'm still got some scar tissue over this. The brigade took two of my master sergeants to be the new first sergeants, one for JPMRC and one for 196th Infantry Brigade. So, like, yeah, I'm blessed. Yeah. Like, congratulations. But these guys are great. And what I'm saying is what you can do coming here is you're already good at what you do. But what I always tell people is to make that 100% of an OCT here to me is like 50% knowing your job cold, which these men and women do. I mean, they come here and they know they're coming out of command or they're coming out of platoon sergeant. They know the doctrine. They know what it looks like in the field. That's why I try to heavily, if I can, recruit people with either 11th or 25th experience, because that just makes us so much better right off the jump, but then I'd say that other 25% is you better be doing PT, and you better look like a professional soldier, because you're in front of the training unit. You have a lot of eyes on you. People are always looking at you. They're always critiquing you. You're the OCT. Well, it's like, who's this guy to tell me if he, looks sloppy or doesn't know or hasn't done this or that, so 25% of that doing PT. Plus, if you don't have PT and that positive attitude, that you can't go to these environments and survive. You're not going to be like, oh, it's 80 degrees here in Hawaii. 2 days later, you're in somewhere, it's a negative 35. So I always say, 50% know your job, 25% PT. And then the biggest 25% for us is you have to be somebody that people want to work with. Maybe, I could use some colorful language, but like, don't be a jerk. That's that 25%. That's that part that really gets you above and beyond the normal, because you can have that 75%. You can have like a guy or girl who is like awesome at their job. And these people, Gary, like awesome at their job. They're awesome PT studs, but man, nobody wants to work with them. Nobody wants to hear them tell them, or the way their delivery is or whatever. I mean, as JPMRC, we're working in your environment. We need to be the best teammates that we can be. I mean, that is from top down. You want to get on my brigade commander's bad side? Let them find out that you're a bad teammate, or you're not someone that one of these units want to work with. We will make your dreams come true somewhere else. That's the total OCT. If I was telling someone that, yeah, be good at your job, do PT, and then be a great teammate overall.
I like it. It's like, shoot it to me straight. But that's true. Like, there's a lot of people out there, hey, they might be good at, they know their craft, but they're very bad at their delivery and are not being a good teammate. And that's, as you said, you're out front, you're being an OC, you're out there, you're supposed to help set that standard on this is how this operation is supposed to be, because you're out there coaching them, you're observing them, providing that training. So how critical is on how you hold yourself when you're out there. So is there anything else that we missed today that you wanted to talk about?
Yes, I would just say that this has been like an opportunity of a lifetime for me, like being in this position. I think the CTCs are changing in the sense that their emphasis on them. So I would tell people out there, I think it's not like how it was looked at before. As far as for broadening, we talked to HRC a lot, and I think that this CTC is getting a lot of traction. If you want somewhere different or you want to travel and really see the Pacific, this is the place to be. The only other thing I would say is, and this is something that I started to notice when you and I were kind of flushing this out about, especially out in these environments, is our approach to logistics and aviation. I never really touched on that, but it's something I'm kind of been thinking about is like, are emphasizing on that integration, because, you know, aerial delivery and stuff like that, we sometimes touch on it, we sometimes do it, but, and I don't know where that goes, where we maybe start tying in more aviation into a sustainment brigade, where with that goal of like creating a more agile and like responsive force, if that makes sense, because we just would need it. If you asking me what I would think, and I'm not talking about from a CTC standpoint, I'm talking about just in an Army sustainment focus in the Pacific, we're going to have to be way more tied in with the other services. Specifically Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, you know what I mean? When we're creating those expeditionary forces, but for us specifically, I would say aviation, I think, going forward. So if that's my pitch for going forward, that, and then I always leave the training units with a question or something like that. And I found one with the 11th the other day that kind of came up where I asked them, I said, did anyone from the brigade or division ever ask you where you thought the enemy's sustainment was located? And it's always no. So just something for you there, Garrett, that I always say is that, like, if you want to get after the enemy and you want to get after their sustainment, the way that you'll see in the Ukraine, or how we've always, you know, we've started to see that, and the impact that has on the battlefield today, you may want to ask sustainers where they think that stuff is, whether that's in a fusion cell or something like that. But that's just something I like to always keep in the back of people's minds, is kind of, you know, understanding the subject matter experts may have more to offer from, you know, an offensive or counter logistics standpoint. Something to think about.
I like that question a lot. That's definitely really get you thinking. And then your other point, when you talk about aviation assets, we'll say it especially out to our listeners out there, we actually are in the midst of planning a upcoming podcast episode about the integration of aviation and sustainment. So on your point, there is going to be a future episode that we're going to be kind of talking about that, because that is a huge thing we need to be looking at, is how do we integrate, better integrate aviation and sustainment operations, because it's, you know, we talk a lot about some with airborne operations, but there's a lot when it comes to air assault operations and getting things in, especially, I know, when it comes to the Arctic, that's a big part of it, of airlifting assets in, especially regions where there is no roads, because dealing with the Arctic, there's a lot of places there's no roads. You have, that's a lot of restricted terrain. So looking forward to upcoming episodes on that. So
great. I'd love to hear that. I'd love to hear that. And I'm glad to hear that you guys are tackling that.
So definitely be on the lookout for that, sir. And then my final point for you, as I ask everybody, is what is your advice for the sustainment community?
Oh man, that's a tough one. Sustainment, it's just, I think we've touched on it today, but I'll just reiterate. I think it's look at all the environments. And then when we're looking at doctrine, or we're looking at making up new concepts for units, understand that Fort Wainwright, what works at Fort Campbell may not work at Fort Wainwright. What works in, you know, Schofield Barracks or in these island chains may not work at Fort Bragg. So we just have to do that and make some adaptable policies with stuff that makes sense. And don't get away from the basics. That's all I would say. Don't get away from the basics, because as we get more dispersed and the more we start focusing on survivability, you have to know that no one's coming. You know, the maneuver forces are on the move and they're going forward, they're stretched thin as well. And so if you're being harassed by, you know, IDF, or you may have to get a QRF together and you may need to go in that tree line and find out where that OP is and why are you being spotted. And you're gonna have to be able to defend yourself. So I would just say, as we get more unique and lean out, let's not forget about the basics and that field craft as well, that'll keep these people alive.
Well, just thank you so much, sir, for that wisdom. And this has been a very, very fun episode for me today. And just hearing from you and all your wisdom, just, man, we went over a lot today. And it's made me excited just to even go back and do another JPMRC exercise. So where can people... Hey, you really sold it today.
Yeah, no, hey, and I'll tell you, Gary, this is my first one of these, and this was a lot of fun, and I really appreciate the opportunity to tell our story out here, because the men and women of JPMRC are just so, what a good team. I wouldn't have it any other way. So thank you so much.
Of course. So where can people find you at if they have any additional follow-up questions then?
Well, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, but you can reach out to me. I'm on Global. It's keith.d.twitchell, and that's T-W-I-C-H-E-L-L. I think I'm the only one in there. So reach out anytime. I'm real easy, or you can hit me up on Teams. I'll be in this position until the beginning of July. So even after that, feel free to reach out. I'm an open book, and I just want to make the team better, and I want to win. So whatever it takes.
Well, once again, sir, thank you so much for just taking the time to meet with me virtually. And this has just been an amazing, fun conversation. It's just a perfect, great way to close out this mini series on the trends of the brigade and below from each of the CTC. So once again, sir, thank you so much for coming on today.
Of course. Thanks, Garrett.
So these past four episodes examining NTC, JRTC, JMRC, and JPMRC, wow, that's a lot of C's to say, has been filled with so much wisdom, and I hope you all have enjoyed our first mini-series and another fan-requested topic. Please continue to send in your feedback. We want to continue to deliver you the best and most innovative topics for the Army Sustainment Enterprise.
And on the concept of the Army Sustainment Enterprise, we'll be launching our second mini-series in 2 weeks, on the continuous transformation with the Army Sustainment Enterprise.
We have a variety of topics coming to you from the HQDA G4 office for how the Army is modernizing their Army food program, property accountability with Paraline, the next generation of OCIE management with SEAM, and a new era of global sustainment. Now, to learn more about each topic and how they're going to revolutionize the sustainment warfighter, be sure to stay tuned each week as we dive further into how the Army Sustainment Enterprise is meeting the CSA's initiative of continuous transformation. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.